Hi, welcome to The Left Brain Artist. I'm Suzanne Redmond. In my weekly conversations with artists, I've talked with a lot of painters as well as a lot of mixed media artists. Today, though, I'm entering the world of metalsmithing as I talk with jewelry artist Maria Tritico. I don't know why it's taken me so long to interview a jewelry artist, because jewelry is something I make and I love. While I'm not nearly as talented as Maria, I held my own as she talks about designing and building her jewelry. Her beautiful sterling silver and vermeil jewelry is inspired by construction and the places where she's lived. We also talk about how her jewelry has changed over the years, as well as the extra complications of photographing and displaying shiny jewelry. This past year, she was an artist in residence at an art gallery and school, and we talk about the application process and what is expected of a resident. In her current position, she's teaching jewelry techniques to adults and teens, and she's also developing an art therapy program. And in her spare time, she's getting her jewelry into shows in other states, including an upcoming show in New York City. This is Maria Tritico. Hi, Maria. Thanks for joining me today.
Hi, Suzanne.
Oh, I'm so happy to talk to you. I need to catch up with you because I know what you were doing last year when you were artist in residence with the Armory Arts Center, but I'm not sure what you're doing this year. So where are you now?
So this year I am at the Lighthouse Arts Center up in Tequesta, Florida, and I am growing their jewelry and art therapy programs.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah, so I'm teaching jewelry and youth classes here while I'm doing that.
Okay. Did they have an art therapy program before you got there?
They did not, no.
Okay. All right. So let's go backwards a little bit. And why don't you tell me about your first degree where you got a BFA in studio art. Tell me about that.
All right. So I graduated from Texas State University with a double BFA in photography and in metalsmithing.
Oh, okay. All right. What kind of shows did you do while you were in school?
So I did a lot of student shows. Anytime I could apply for a student show, I was applying. Whether or not I was in one was a different story, but I was applying. And then I would apply to, there's a few local galleries that I would apply to and get in every once in a while. We did a lot of group shows. And then I would apply for the Society of North American Goldsmith, or SNAGS, student shows that would happen annually during their conference.
Oh, okay. All right. And so what kind of jewelry were you? I know what your style is right now. Was that your style back then?
No, it was so different.
Oh,
so,
yeah?
Yeah, in undergrad, I spent most of my time making work that was more like wearable sculpture. So it was large and grandiose and generally had a theme that was more about like fear. So it was how would your body react if you were to wear your fear every day? You were to choose to put your fear on. So I had a bird brooch that was comprised of 125 individually sprung and moving birds made out of brass. And it was a brooch to it, but it climbed from your back across your shoulder to front. And so every time you moved or walked, it chattered in your ear just out of the kind of the line of sight.
Oh, my gosh, that's incredible.
Thanks.
What made you do works of art about fear?
I was really interested in it. You know, I think there was probably some like hard time or whatever that was happening in early college. And then I decided that, you know, I was not going to live in fear anymore. So then I was exploring those fears and like, how do you face that? And what would that be like? And how would that be if you were like, what would be the physical embodiment of that? And then that physical embodiment kind of related to jewelry. So that's, I guess, how I made that leap.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. When you showed that art, those art pieces, were they showed on the wall or were they on models walking around wearing them?
Oh, I wish they were on models, but yeah. No, they were, they were on, mannequins.
Oh, so okay.
There was one piece I made that was, a mirror, a shattered mirror, tape. And so it was about 3 feet tall. It was a size 6, like, you know, it was made to fit. And, but it was about 3 feet long and about 80 pounds. And so for that one, I made a steel armature that was hung from the ceiling. And then all the other ones were on mannequins.
Oh, okay.
So unfortunately, they didn't have, you didn't feel them in the same way you would have if it was on a person walking around. But I think people got it because it was just enough, like, people walking that the floor would move a little bit and the birds would chatter. Or another one I made was like a fear of hair. So I made this collar and it was all out of human hair. And at first it looked really beautiful, like a mink, like you didn't really know what kind of hair it was. And then you would read the description, it would say human hair. And then all of a sudden you'd see people just like reaching at their necks like, oh no. And so you'd see that transition from like, oh, that's really cool to, oh, that's really gross.
Oh yeah. And the creep factor came in. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh. So those are so different than what you're doing right now. Wow. So at what point did you say, okay, time to move on from my fears for my jewelry?
Well, so when I got to grad school, I had to write my thesis, and I went to grad school at the School of the Art Institute of Chicago.
Okay.
For art therapy.
Alrighty.
And, while I was there, I had to write my thesis, and I was looking at the way art therapists were approaching art making, and it wasn't the way I approached art making. So I instead wrote my whole thesis on, the way I make art. And so because I had made this whole body about fears and kind of diving into one's fears and then how do you represent that fear without being like too on the nose or overly cheesy or just like it not making sense. How do you consider materials, all those things? That all became my thesis. So I wrote a thesis called Elucidative Inquiry. I don't remember the rest of the title. It was like really long. But
that's a good start. Elucidated inquiry.
So it was a like self-research based thesis. So the art therapist doing the internal research would start with some kind of feeling or like something that they couldn't quite resonate with, whether that was in life or in a session or something that their client had told them. And they would start to explore that. And so they would start with that initial reaction and go from there. So I'm still kind of not directly working in fears, but working in that same way. So all through grad school, I was still making these larger than life, wearable sculptures. And then I graduated and I moved to Florida, and I wasn't working, directly in fields where I was having these same kinds of reactions to things that people were telling me. And I kind of sat still for a good 6 months and didn't make anything.
Oh, wow.
Because I didn't have the same kind of the mode of inspiration. I had to come up with a new way to make. And so that took a while to get there. And I made some really bad things, just like trying to get back into it.
Okay. Just figuring it out. Yeah.
Yeah. Like I made a lot of Christmas presents, like for my family. And I think from one of those Christmas presents, I started teaching a class, and in that class, I started having conversations about it, and it kind of morphed into what I'm making now, which is more about like looking at the world around me versus being like having an emotional reaction to things happening in the world.
Okay. Yeah. So the pieces that you've been doing lately, they really have, as you say on your website, inspiration from construction or architecture. Do you have something in your background where you were really into architecture?
No.
No?
I think, so I'm from Houston originally, and Houston is not necessarily known for its, like, great architecture. And so then I moved to Chicago, and there was all different new, like, kinds of architecture, and then I moved to Florida, and it's even more different. I think that I was responding to, like, just the new environment and okay. looking at the new forms of architecture. It was less like art brut and more art deco. And so I think that's really where it's coming from. I was looking at all these new lines and the way the buildings were interacting with the environment around them, and even like the kind of implied patterns that happen okay. in architecture or even in construction materials. Yeah, I think part of the construction materials came from, like, in Chicago, all the construction happens in, like, a four-month period. So there's just construction materials everywhere, just, like, lines the city.
Oh, wow. Okay, so during their busy season, what time of year is the busy season?
It's summer, because that's the only time it's not frozen.
Oh, okay. All right.
So during late spring, summer, early fall, there's construction just happening everywhere all at one time, because then as soon as it starts to get too cold or too windy, they have to shut it all down.
Oh,
so it all
okay.
happens really quickly.
Oh, all right. Okay. So now you've really developed this style, which is just beautiful, and you're using both silver, and I was reading that you're using vermeil as well.
Mm-hmm.
When did you start using vermeil? Is that a material that you learned about in your undergraduate degree?
No, we didn't talk too much about it. It was more like my undergraduate degree focused more on like fine arts, like wearable, like sculptural stuff.
Okay.
Vermeil, I learned about because I couldn't afford to make gold jewelry, and I really wanted to be able to make gold jewelry. I had a lot of people asking me to make gold jewelry, so the way for me to get into that field, into that area, was to do plating, which
okay.
I wasn't sure how I felt about plating. And the more I read about it, the more they were talking about, okay, well, if you go with vermeil, then it's thick enough that as long as you don't have a worry rubber, like someone that sits there and rubs on their necklace
yeah.
or their earrings when they're stressed out, then you should be okay. So that's kind of how I got into it. It was more just like a need and
the practicality.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. 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 Especially with the gold prices that just went so crazy a few years
yeah.
back. Yeah. Yeah. Because I mean, I don't know anyone who's working in gold anymore. So you're not doing the actual plating, are you?
No, I send it out to get plated.
So you make the piece completely in silver and then mm-hmm. later it's plated. Oh, that's interesting. Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
So that is the big thing between like a simply plated and vermeil, is that vermeil has a sterling silver base with a gold top.
Okay, right.
And it has to be at least 2.5 microns.
Thickness.
Yes.
Thickness of the plating. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay. Let's switch and talk about your art therapy, because you have worked as an art therapist and
mm-hmm.
now you're starting a program in art therapy. What are the roles you've had in art therapy in the past?
Well, so I've worked in a number of different like facilities and in groups. I did, when I was in grad school, I worked in assisted living and in incarceration. I worked at a jail.
Oh, okay.
And then after that, when I moved to Florida, it's kind of challenging to find art therapy positions in Florida. So I was working with a therapist who was incorporating art into his practice. So it
okay.
wasn't technically art therapy, but when I was there, I guess it was, because I was an art therapist. But we were doing art-based therapies in addiction centers and rehabs. And so we would go in and work with people. But it's such a high turnover. It's kind of a hard way to keep going, just because people are only there for a few weeks at a time.
Oh, I gotcha. Okay.
Yep.
All right.
And so then here, and then after that, I've worked with a veteran.
Oh, okay. All right. And was that at the VA hospital here?
That was at the Armory. They started
oh,
a veterans
okay.
program there. So I still work with them.
Oh, that's great.
That
what kind of yeah. things do you do with them?
So they have this great program where they get to take, it's basically like taking a class. So they have an instructor that teaches the whole time. And then I'm there and I do like the intro to the class and a discussion afterwards. And I'm there to make sure that if someone is being triggered by something or if there's a loud noise or a sensation that could be potentially triggering, that I'm there to make sure that the space is always safe for them.
Oh, okay.
And so if I need to, I can intervene or take a walk with someone, or because I know enough about most of the different classes that they might be taking, I can say, okay, heads up, guys. Like when you turn on the torch, it might make a spitting sound or a popping sound.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just to kind of give them a heads up and know what to expect.
Okay. And the teacher is, you're the only therapist. The teacher is just teaching art.
Exactly.
Okay.
So it's a nice pair. So I can be there just to observe and make sure that everyone is okay and have discussions with them as they're working, and the teacher can just focus on teaching.
Okay. And you're still doing that at the Armory?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
What are the plans with the Lighthouse Art Center art therapy program?
So we're still very much in the early stages of discussing, like, who we're going to bring in and how we're going to facilitate that. So we don't have too many specifics just yet.
Okay. Well, who are your target audience for that? Will it be for adults or children or certain groups like veterans?
So most likely we'll start with one specific group, probably adults, and we'll go from there. So we'll build one group program at a time. So it won't be open to all, but it would be very specific.
Okay. And your position at the Lighthouse Arts Center is permanent in that it's not like a one-year artist residency. Is that correct?
No, it's a permanent position.
Yeah. Okay. Great. Well, that's wonderful. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And tell me about the classes that you're teaching there right now.
So
this is
right
unrelated
now,
to art therapy. Yeah.
Yeah. So right now I'm teaching an intro to jewelry and metal smithing on Monday evenings. It's called Linear Designs and Stone Setting. It's an advanced class on Tuesday afternoons. And then I also offer a teen jewelry class, which is super fun, and I hope some teens sign up for it. Since I also know how to work in clay, I teach a youth ceramic class and then a teen sculpture class, ceramic sculpture class.
Oh,
on
that's wonderful.
Wednesdays.
Okay.
Yeah.
And at the Lighthouse Arts Center, all the classrooms are completely filled with all the equipment and everything that you need. So do the students have to bring anything?
Students do have to bring like their own personal hand tools, but for the most part, we have all the like the big tools that they would need. We have torches for soldering and all of that stuff, but like the metal they want to use, and we recommend that they'd have to bring that, and the clay they want to use. We offer clay for sale here, and we do recommend that you use that. That way we know what cone to fire it to. There's no miscommunication about what cone it is.
Okay.
But then again, like small hand tools, those things we do recommend that people invest their own in and bring those with them.
Well, that makes sense because they want to start their own collection of tools.
Right. Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yep. And we only have so many to go around. So providing a full class set can get a little cumbersome.
Yes. Yeah. And in the classes, are you working with sheet metal or wire for the metal smithing ones?
We do a little bit of all of it. So it depends on what project we're working on. So my intro students made this big cuff bracelet with sheet metal, and they learned how to solder and form and texture and polish. And then last night they made a band ring out of sheet metal silver. So we went from copper to silver sheet metal. And then next week they will learn how to make a prong setting.
Oh,
so,
wow. That's great.
Yeah, we're moving right along. And so the prong setting will be out of wire. So they'll get to make, in their first 6 weeks of class, they'll get to work with different materials, making different things. So.
Oh, that's wonderful. Yeah. And they're learning soldering. And the soldering is done by a torch or a soldering iron?
So we use an acetylene torch. So it's acetylene tank. And then it uses ambient air to kind of add the pressure.
Okay. All right. Well, gosh, that's great. Okay, so that's what you're doing at the Lighthouse Arts Center, which is mm-hmm. on the northern end of Palm Beach County, Florida. But last year, you were at the Armory Arts Center, and you were artist-in-residence. Can yeah. you tell me about your artist-in-residence program? How? First of all, let's start with, how did you apply? What did you have to do to actually get this position?
Sure. So there's a relatively standard application. They ask for a CV, a resume, a portfolio of work that you've made in the last 2 years. And then there's a bunch of questions. So the Armory's residency, which is a little slightly different than a lot of other artisan residencies, really focuses on the education side of things. So not only do they want you to be a great artist and a great working artist, and produce a brilliant body of work, but they also want you to focus on the education. And so a lot of their questions are focused on your classes and what you would offer to the classes that are different from what the instructors are already teaching. And so they do want you to teach a good course load while you're there working on your own body of work.
Okay. So when you get this artisan residency position, they are giving you a full studio, correct? Or a shared studio?
So it's a little bit different for jewelry because we don't have a studio to offer. But, so for 2D sculpture and ceramics, they have their own independent studio. Jewelry doesn't have that additional space inside of the administration building. So I was given, and the past residents the same, kind of a cornered off area of the room that was your space okay. to do with what you needed.
Okay, well, great. Well, I mean, it makes it more convenient because it's right in the classroom,
it's
right?
It's right there, yeah. So any tool I needed was right there.
Yeah. And at the Lighthouse Arts Center, do you have a studio there now?
I have like a little cornered off section that is mine. But no like private space now.
Okay. All right. Do you have a studio at your home too?
I don't.
No.
I don't feel comfortable using a torch on top of carpet. And unfortunately, our spare bedroom is made of carpet. It has carpet flooring. So I haven't set up a home studio. Okay. So I do get all my work done in my little nook and it works out just fine.
Well, yeah. And you can keep all your tools in one place instead. Yeah. Working in two different, yeah. Well, I've seen photographs of on your desk where you will draw out your designs, where you're drawing. Mm-hmm. That seems like that's a big part of what you do, actually designing it on paper first.
Yeah, so I think that's what actually drew me to metal was that even when I was making drastically different things is that anything you make in paper can be made in metal, right? They work one in the same.
Okay.
And so, I mean, slightly different process, tape versus solder, but, but I need that like physical calculation of how it's going to be made before I actually jump into the metal. Otherwise it's kind of a free for all and I'm not that loosey goosey. So.
Right.
I have things like measured out to the millimeter of how big it needs to be and how it's going to fit so that I can then start making it and constructing it. And all the plans are done before I get started. Sometimes there's some slight alterations as, you know, you're adjusting for metal thickness, but for the most part, I want to know what's going to happen.
Right. Do you actually make a model before you make it in metal?
Sometimes. So for some of my like larger necklaces, I have these in my head, right? It makes sense. And on paper, it looks like it would make sense, but I need to make sure that the different shapes, the way that they're going to fold and interact with the shape next to it is actually going to work to go around your neck
right.
or sit nicely at the base of on your chest. So I will make a paper model that to make sure that those are going to fit right before I start going into metal. I don't do that for every one of them, just for my larger pieces.
Yeah, that makes sense. And when people look at the photographs, I'll have photographs of your work on my show notes. So when they look at it, they'll know what we're talking about because it does have to lay properly when you're talking about a piece that might be an inch and a half wide connected to another one that's an inch and a half wide.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, so let's go back to the Armory Art Center with your artist in residency program. So you were required to teach so many classes while you were a resident.
Mm-hmm.
And when you say you're producing a body of work, what requirements do they have for that when you're just, it's not connected to a class, but you're just producing things throughout the year?
Right. So part of artists in residencies is that you give a portion of your time to making the studio run effectively. So like studio maintenance and cleaning and stuff like that. And then you give a portion of your time to making your body of work. That's really what we're there for, is that time to make our work, where we are given some assistance and a studio so that we have the time and space and financial stability to be able to work and develop that body of work. So at the Armory, they're driving force to get that really great body of work at the end of your residency is a residence show. So okay. In the springtime, they have a residence show where myself and three other, there's four of us last year that were residents. The four residents, we had one group show that was our culminating show. So all the things we had worked on for the months leading up to it, since we got to the Armory, were showcased for a month.
Oh, that's wonderful. And you had to plan, the four of you planned the whole show and the placement of everything.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, wow. Okay. That's a big undertaking.
Yeah, but it's you know, we love it. It's exciting.
Right.
Sometimes, you know, you have your initial meeting and you walk away and you're like, man, I didn't get the placement I quite wanted. So the next time you go back and you're like, okay. So I like the idea, but let's see if we can't move some things around. I don't think it's going to flow quite right. And so you get all your planning done, and then the day of install actually comes and you're laying things out where they're going to go. And you're like, this isn't quite working. Let's move this even still. Or let's add a piece because we're missing something over there. And the back room isn't flowing because there was two rooms. So
you had to
make sure both galleries were flowing both independently and in conjunction with each other.
Oh, okay. All right. And so the little wrinkle with displaying jewelry is it's not like just a painting that you hang on the wall, that
right.
You need to display it so that it's also secure too, so no one can just walk through and put it in their pocket. So
right.
What kind of techniques have you used for that, for displaying jewelry in a gallery space?
So it depends. For shows in the past, sometimes I'll hang a piece of plexiglass that's like magnetically attached to the board. So, you couldn't like reach your hand right behind it. You'd actually have to pull the glass off, take the piece off, and then put the glass back on. And it would be kind of obvious.
It would be a big effort. Yeah.
Yeah. That being said, with my resident show, I really didn't want that separation. So, all of my pieces were hung on the wall, except for I made two bracelets and they were on a pedestal. So for those two bracelets, I drilled a hole through the pedestal and I used a fishing weight and some monofilament. So the monofilament ran through the bottom of the pedestal up to the top, and then it was attached to the bracelet.
Okay.
So, and then the weight held the wire down so that every time someone picked it up or put it down, it would go right back down the hole and you wouldn't get this bundle of tangled wire on top of the pedestal.
That's clever. So it gave them 6 inches or a foot of wire where they could pull it out and they could
try it on.
Oh, wow. That's really clever. I like that.
But then with all the necklaces, they were on the wall. And I had built these really beautiful wall hangings where they were these floating framed boards that were this deep, dark teal color. And then the pieces, all the necklaces hung, they kind of floated in front of those boards off of altered T-pins. So I kind of nipped the top off of the T-pin. So it was just like a little bent piece of steel. So my original plan was to also put a piece of monofilament through the back of it, because there was like an inch worth of space from the back of the board to the wall.
Okay.
Where the cleat hung. And so I could put a piece of monofilament with a little fishing weight down there also. But getting the necklaces on and off the T-pins was such a kind of a pain that it was kind of, it worked the same as the plexiglass. It would take someone so much effort to get it off that you would notice.
I see. So yeah.
I actually didn't secure them any further than that. And I just really had faith that people were good people
yeah.
and they wouldn't take them.
That's great. Yeah. yeah. So the other tricky thing about jewelry is, in my opinion, it's very hard to photograph it well. Mm-hmm. And you have some beautiful photographs on your website. What are some tricks that you have for photographing your jewelry?
Ooh, well, they are
because
all...
Because it shines.
yes. Well, photographing jewelry is a challenge, right? Because it is shiny and reflective in all directions. So yeah. One thing that I use is I don't like the light boxes that you just like throw and they inflate.
Yeah.
I don't know what they're called other than a light box, but
yeah.
they have,
yeah.
they're white on all the way around.
Mm-hmm.
Those, I always have a hard time getting the camera in the angle that I need in order to photograph my piece because it's so constricting, which
okay.
is good on one hand because it blocks out all the colors and noise around you. But one thing I found better is actually making one that doesn't collapse, unfortunately, but making one out of PVC pipe. So it's all made out of a white substance. And then you get, they sell that, it's like a film. It's like a, I don't really know what it's called, but it's a translucent white film. And
okay.
you put that all the way around this PVC box. And then you get a piece of, white photographic paper to kind of slip in for the bottom and back.
Oh, okay.
And then, mm-hmm. and then you light all the way around it. I don't know if that description made sense.
No, it does to me. I see what you're saying. Yeah. So you've chosen to put your silver pieces on white. Did
mm-hmm.
you consider black?
I did. And I just don't care for it. I really
okay.
like the bright white, and that's just a
yeah.
personal preference.
Yep.
Because I mean, it would really pop off of a black, which is also why I choose to put them on a dark teal, because they really pop off of that. But I really like the way the photographs look when they're white. And then additionally, a lot of, when you're applying to shows, a lot of galleries want white backgrounds.
That makes
sense.
Because
then they're all
yeah.
the same.
Yeah.
So it is easier just to photograph everything on white and then every once in a while take a photograph somewhere else than to have multiple backgrounds.
Okay. All righty. So you've shown your work at the Armory Arts Center for the different mm-hmm. resident shows, and you've also shown it at other places. Tell me about some of the shows that you've done, the galleries where you've shown your work.
Sure. So this year, in the beginning of the year, I showed at Continuum, which is a pop-up show that happens in January.
Yep.
During Palm Beach Arts.
Palm Beach Art Week, essentially.
That's it.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So it happens in conjunction with that, like, time frame.
Yep.
And that's always a really fun show that draws a really big turnout.
Yeah, it really is. Yeah.
With a lot of local artists, which is really nice.
Yep.
And then,
Now, didn't you, yeah, you were out of state. You showed some out of state, didn't you, recently?
Yep. So I showed in Ohio. There's a place called The Smithery, and it was a small gallery store started by a couple of jewelers. And then, so that was a fun all jewelry show. And then I have a show coming up in November, the week before Thanksgiving. It's the first annual New York City Jewelry Week. And so that is a show that I'm looking forward to. I have three pieces in a show in conjunction with them. So it's called #fail#success.
Oh, okay. And what week is that?
That would be, New York City Jewelry Week runs from November 12th to the 18th.
Oh, I could actually go see it. I think I'm
oh,
going
yeah.
up to New York City that last weekend.
Awesome.
I'll have to look that up. Where is it held? Is it a convention center?
So it happens kind of all over. The main location, the New York City Jewelry Week headquarters, is at a building called Artists and Flea in Soho. And then there's different pop-ups happening all over. So the Museum of Art and Design has a show, I believe, with Robert Baines. And then Pratt Institute has a show. and Brooklyn Metalworks has a show and I think some demos. And so there's things kind of happening all over, but I believe the main center for everything is at Artists in Flea in SoHo.
Do you know yet where yours will be?
It'll be at Artists in Flea.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Are you saying Artist and Flea?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Hard to say.
It is. I didn't know if it was one word or what.
No.
I'll look it up and I'll put a link to it on the show notes for this episode.
Okay.
So people can find it. How did you find out about that show to be in it?
So on Instagram, you can follow hashtags. And so I follow hashtag call for entry. And the curators, Icons at Play, that's the curatorial group, they had a post and it was hashtag call for entry. And so it popped up in my news feed. And I think I caught it like 2 days before it closed. And was able to apply kind of last minute, got in there.
Oh, wow. That's great. That's the big plus by having good photographs of your artwork already made.
Yeah.
So you can just send that email, send that application through. Yeah. Oh, well, that's great. Congratulations. That's
Thank
an exciting
you.
One.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you have to mail your pieces up to them because it's an out-of-state show.
Yeah,
that's
I did
a
that
little
last
scary,
week.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then how it's up for that week and then they mail it back if it's not sold or?
Yeah, kind of. It's up for a little bit longer, I believe, than a week in the space altogether.
Okay.
But the jewelry week is only for that 1 week.
Okay.
So then any unsold pieces will be mailed back, I believe, within the 2 weeks following the close of the show.
All right. Well, that's a great way to find shows. I hadn't thought about, I know people do the callforentry.org, the website, but I hadn't thought about the hashtag on Instagram.
Yeah. You know, I've been finding a lot of smaller places that are smaller, like in that they don't have the funding that other like large institutions do, are using social media as ways to get their show calls out there because Call for Entry has a fee and not everyone can afford that fee. I think I've applied to 3 or 4 shows this year that were on Call for Entry, not on Call for Entry, but I found on Instagram.
Oh, that's wonderful. So you have a strong Instagram presence then?
I try to.
You try to. All right. What are the other social media sites that you use?
I do use Facebook and I think that's about it.
Okay. All right. And then what's the name of your website?
It is mariatritico.com.
Okay. All right. Well, let me look through my notes. I want to make sure I talked about everything I wanted to. I did want to talk about the month of October. You're offering a special where you're donating some funds from any sales. Tell me about that.
Yeah. So my cousin is basically like my sister. We grew up together. I love her immensely. And her daughter, Elliot Joy, is just the cutest thing ever. And her birthday is in October, but she was also born with Down syndrome.
Okay.
So October is Down syndrome awareness, or like we like to call it, acceptance month. And so
I like that.
In honor of her and all kids with Down syndrome, I am donating 30% of all sales during the month of October to Gigi's Playhouse Houston, which is a really cool not-for-profit organization that has multiple locations all over the country and Mexico. And they provide 100% free services to any family with a family member with Down syndrome. So from prenatal all the way through adults, they have services for you and for your family members that are therapeutic and inviting and warm and skill providing and information providing services.
Oh, that's wonderful. That's wonderful. So you've put that notice on your website and also on your Etsy shop. Is Etsy the main place where you're selling your jewelry online?
Yeah, that's my main shop. So my website redirects you when you hit shop to my Etsy account. Sometimes there are things on my website that are maybe like the larger pieces that aren't listed on my Etsy account. And if anyone is interested in those, they can just send me an email or contact me in some way, and I can give you the information for that. But I do sell, my shop is directed through Etsy.
Okay. All right. That sounds good. And one other thing I saw on your website is you're on the board of an organization that helps people in Haiti.
Yeah, so I was. I actually need to change that. I'm not any longer, but I did. I was one of the original board members for Savoir Haiti, and it's an organization that helps young women who are transitioning out of orphan care, because they get kicked out of the orphanages when they turn 18, and a lot of young women especially don't, they haven't finished high school at that time. In Haiti, on average, it takes into your early 20s to finish high school. So they don't have the education, the skills, the financial backing, and they don't have the support because they don't have a designated place to live anymore. So this organization, it's small, but it employs girls who are transitioning out of orphan care. It gives them a month-long training into sewing and different kinds of like computer skills, and they set up an email and a bank account and all of these kind of adult things that you would learn through your teens. It happens relatively quickly in a one-month period, and then after that one-month training, they get a job, and they are a part of the whole organization from start to finish. They run it. And so they design, they make, they sell, they do all the things to run this organization, and they get a living wage.
How'd you get involved with that?
Kind of by happenstance. So in Chicago, when I was in grad school, my neighbor, who is a professional photographer and did a lot of work in Haiti with different missions and things, she had met this young woman that was beginning her transition out of orphan care and needed something. And she really wanted to be able to learn how to sew, because then she could provide for herself and for her family, because a lot of orphans in Haiti aren't technically orphans. They actually have full families.
Oh, wow.
So this young woman wanted to learn how to sew so that she could pay for herself and potentially her family. And so from that conversation, the founder started Savoir, and I was her neighbor, and we were up one night chatting about what she wanted to do. And initially she wanted to have an art therapy component. So we were talking about what that would look like. And so I did a lot of kind of advisory stuff in the first year or two. I went to Haiti once and advised on some of the art therapy things that we were trying to get going. So now it's more of like a community outreach and a community group versus an art therapy specific one. It just kind of didn't work for the model, but it is a beautiful organization that the founder doesn't take anything from. All the money goes straight back to the girls who are the ones running it. So it's a program that the founder started, but has always been designed to be turned over to the girls once they and the company are at a point where it makes sense.
That's great. So it'll be an ongoing thing.
Mm-hmm.
Right, right. Oh, that's wonderful. Okay. All right. Well, I'll put a link to that because people may be interested in hearing about that. I thought for sure you got connected with that once you were moved to South Florida, because we
No.
have such a large Haitian population here. Oh, that's funny. All right. Just give me a second. I'm just going to look and see if there's anything else I wanted to ask. Anything new, like is your jewelry going in a new direction? Anything like that you'd like to talk about?
I don't think my jewelry is really going in a new direction per se, but I am looking to kind of expand on some of the things that I already have. So I really am loving making these double pin stem brooches. So it just sits on your front, like on your chest, like a piece of artwork. You don't have to hang it off your neck, and it doesn't change shape. It stays the way you want it. So I'm really loving that. And I love making what I call the skyscraper necklaces. So when they're on the wall, they're long and skinny like a skyscraper. But when you wear them, it's actually a pendant on your front and your back. So I,
you mean it hangs in your back too?
Yep.
Oh, cool. All
so, right. So yeah, it doesn't hang off the base of your neck. It hangs over your shoulders and in the middle of your back.
Oh, that's great. Okay.
So I'm really loving those two things specifically. So I'm going to keep pushing new styles, I think, in both the double pinstone brooch and the skyscraper necklaces.
Oh, very nice. Well, we'll look forward to seeing pictures of those.
Thank you.
All right. Well, I think we've covered just about everything. I'm going to put everything on that we talked about on my show notes so people can look you up. And it looks like you got a lot of fun things happening in the coming year, starting this art therapy program. Well, thanks so much for talking to me.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, you have a good day.
You too. Bye.
All right. Be sure and go to my show notes on my website so you can see some photographs of Maria's amazing jewelry. You need to really see the beautiful jewelry that we've been talking about. Here are some great takeaways from this episode. Number one. Artist residencies enable you to create a body of work over a period of time. You can search online to find many types of residencies from 1 week to a year long. Number two, Maria held a residency that required her to teach classes. When applying for an instructional residency, tell how you'll add to the organization by teaching something new. Number three, create an artist's CV so that you're ready with it when someone asks. Number four, take great photos of your art and have them available so that you can enter a show at the last moment. Number five, find or make a light box to photograph your jewelry and minimize reflection. Number six, jewelry will look beautiful photographed on either a white or black background, but remember that galleries often require your photos to be on a white background. Number seven, display jewelry with a bright background so it will really pop, like Maria did when she used a dark teal background. Number eight. Also when displaying jewelry, ensure that it is secure and cannot be removed from its case. Figure out a way that it can be lifted just far enough so someone can try it on. Maria has used monofilament tied to the jewelry piece and held down by fishing weights. And number nine. Find shows to apply to on Instagram by following the hashtag #callforentry. These are often free to apply rather than requiring a large fee. I hope you've enjoyed hearing Maria talk about her jewelry. Be sure and check out my show notes for this episode on my website, SuzanneRedmond.com, because I've included great photos of many of the jewelry pieces that she described. You can see one of her skyscraper necklaces as well as her slightly creepy hair necklace. I've also got links to her website and her Etsy shop and many other things that we discussed. If you're enjoying these podcasts, please go to iTunes and leave me a review. And thank you for listening to the Left Brain Artist Podcast. I'm Suzanne Redmond. See you next time.